You're listening to For Land's Sake, and I'm Bill Kite, your host. Today we have Genevieve Joel Velamazar in the studio with us, and thank you, Genevieve, for being here today.
I'm so tickled to be here with you, my friend.
Genevieve is a writer and has been highlighted in the current issue of Roaring Fork Lifestyle magazine as a landscape and garden designer who owns her own company, Salt Plus Dirt.
Salt and Dirt.
Ah, Salt and Dirt. The title of the piece is Landscapes That Marry Ecology with Psychology. Some of Genevieve's recent projects include the KDNK radio studio, a brewery, a distillery inn, and the planning for Carbondale's first natural playground at the new LEED certified Ross Montessori school. Genevieve, the title of your company is interesting, Salt and Dirt Outside Design. Tell us about your company and how you got into landscape design and what the name means.
Those are a lot of questions in one question. I've been in this field for over 20 years, and I've learned a lot in that time. And that's why when I decided to work for myself again, I had my own business for 16 years out of college, and that was Evolving Gardens and Grounds Design. And the reason why I called it evolving is because that's what the landscape does. It continually evolves, and we can give it a baseline to start from, but over time, it's going to do its own thing. When I started my own company again this spring, I called it Salt and Dirt Outside Design because, anything worth exploring is worth its salt. And typically, landscape to me connotes something that's very static and it doesn't hold a lot of life in it. And I have found that as long as I pretend I don't know everything and I stay curious, I keep learning as a professional. And our field is just, it's barely tapped. I watched a TED talk about 3 weeks ago. Trees talk to each other. Scientifically proven. Did you know that? They shunt resources to each other.
And
you look at the landscape industry and you would never know that by how we tend to practice. And I think that it's worth its salt for us to continue to be curious and to explore what we're doing. And I do that with the clients that I click with best, is they stay curious and they stay open. And the dirt part is, this is what we're working in. We're working with the earth. We're working in the dirt. And there's so much life that's held in that concept as well. So salt and dirt.
You know, people call tourism the tourist industry. What is that word industry? How do you associate it with landscaping? Or do you feel you're a part of that? Or why do you tend to feel the way you do about landscaping?
I say I work with it. We have a long way to go in terms of actually treating it as a part of Mother Earth and one and all of it being connected. We treat landscape, for example, and this is kind of a no-brainer, really dumbing it down comparison, but sod is separate from the beds, are separate from the landscape that's around it. No, it's none of it's separate. It's all connected. And in the work that I do, I try to figure out those relationships and amplify them. Whereas in the landscape industry, that's a lot, and if you're going to start going down that road, you're really going to have to start examining the kinds of profits that you want to make in your business, the kind of labor that you want to hire. You know, do you want someone who's just going to slam it in the ground and get it done quickly? Or do you want someone who's going to initiate a process? It's not about planting a plant or planting a bunch of plants. It's about initiating a process that's going to sustain itself, number one, be beautiful for us, number two. Number three, maintain and create and amplify all of these connections between birds and bees and pollinators and habitat and the human soul and the relationships we have as people and the relationships between the built environment and the existing environment. And, it's, how can you separate any of that?
You know, to me, the word landscape has always been fascinating because to me, it's landscape. And what we lay over the land culturally depends, of course, on the culture that we're a part of. To me, your work tries to improve upon the built environment or that laying of the culture's cape over the land. And you call it revitalizing the land in the Roaring Fork Lifestyle article. Am I on track here?
Yeah. let me use another example. There's the built environment. Let's say it's a building, and then there's everything that's around it, whether it's other houses or fields or meadows or a vacant lot.
Right.
What I'm trying to do is to bring life to the interface between that building and whatever is surrounding it. I'm trying to bring life and create systems that sustain that life. I feel that's revitalization because it's an improvement that's bringing life.
Okay. I think I've got that now. You mentioned in there one project that you pulled from the spirit of the land. That's a quote unquote. What do you mean by that? You pulled from the spirit of the land.
When you go up to the flat tops, you have to admit there's an energy shift. You have a knowledge of that land. You know what's connected to it. You know the history of it, the cultural history of it,
right,
say between the settlers and the Indians that were there. And you know enough about nature that you can kind of vibe on the different natural ecosystems that are there. And when I say that I pulled from the spirit of the land there, it was originally a valley that had very few homes. It was the first private valley between the grass, like steppe is what they're actually calling it now, the grass steppe meeting the upthrust of the foothills and then going into the Rocky Mountain landscape. There also happen to be these breathtaking red rock hogbacks that are a little bit unique to that part of the state.
Right.
They're common other places, but they're unique here. So there's something you really want to celebrate with those red rock hogbacks. And then it was also the valley that the Poudre River opens out onto when it flows out of the Poudre Canyon. And so you had that, the river spirit, and you have the spirit of the hogbacks. And then there's just, you know, if you just hike up that ridge and you just kind of peek over, you see a totally different landscape. That's that short grass prairie.
Right.
And how can we bring all of those elements together so that when you're on that site, you can sense all of that? I mean, to me, that's really cool.
Oh, well, yeah, I think so, too. I like those words, pulled from the spirit of the land. So that's pretty unique way of looking, I think, at landscaping.
We also, in this industry, we tend to want to put our stamp upon the land. And I didn't move here to bring Connecticut or California or Chicago with me and to surround myself with that. When I sit out in my backyard and I have a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, I want to be bowled over by my sense of Colorado, of the Rocky Mountains. And so pulling from the spirit of the land is I want to look around what's around me and figure out what cues I can take and bring it right up into my experience, whether it's the wind blows and I can smell tall western sage, or the sun sits at a certain angle during the cocktail hour and I plant a bunch of little blue stem because I know it's going to explode in silver light.
The land has a way of speaking to us. What is the land, when you're working on it, with it, in the dirt, what does it say to you?
Oh, golly, it just welcomes me, you know. Landscape has been something incredibly formative and powerful in my whole life. As a family, we moved a lot every year or two. And the only thing that was constant, you know, changing parenting between divorces and deaths, changing homes, changing schools, changing towns, changing neighborhoods, changing regions of the nation, was the landscape. As kids, there was always a creek, there was always a patch of trees, there was always a forest, there was always a meadow, there was always this place where I could go and be still and be peaceful and find magic. And I think that's what drew me to it in the first place after a few false starts.
Knowing you like I do, you're, in what you just said, you're an outdoor girl.
And, full on.
Yeah, that's
my future house is going to be open to the, maybe I'll have to live in the desert or the south, but it's going to be open.
Bringing the land into where you live is a good thing. You mentioned the flat tops. I just got back from there, and that is a very unique place. But don't go there because it's just terrible. The mosquitoes are really bad. The bears will get you.
It's not beautiful.
No, not at all.
It's not worth creating more traffic up there. Ah, don't go.
So being a part, feeling that you're a part of the land, why do you think in the article that I mentioned earlier in the Roaring Fork Lifestyle, why do you think most people don't know how to care for nature?
Because the number of renovations that I do, okay. I get to see what something looks like after 15 years of mismanagement or 30 years of mismanagement or even two or three seasons, you know, and I see mismanagement all around me everywhere. And I just have to put my blinders on and still try and appreciate, you know, nature and urban areas.
Why do you think people mismanage the land? Is it out of ignorance or they really don't care?
I think people do care. Even if they think they don't care, they probably do care. Part of it is we're learning so much so rapidly. You know, for example, I am designing the pollinator garden for the berm and the educational garden at Ross Montessori. And originally I was going to do a prairie style. I was going to do all these bee appropriate plants interspersed with, you know, some native grasses. But I actually learned that bees can find flowers better if they're in blocks, you know, 3 feet by 3 feet. So now, instead of it being this kind of wispy, airy meadow, the kids are going to wind up growing and planting huge blocks of different pollinator species. We're always constantly learning. I'm learning something new on the job site all the time. I can't even imagine what it's like if this isn't what you enjoy doing, you know, in terms of how do you irrigate your lawn? How do you prune your trees? Who knows?
Well, doing landscape work is hard work. It's... it pits you against yourself in a way. You have to be really committed and have a passion for it, don't you? Not everybody wants to go do hard work and move things around.
No, and some people don't even want to do the really easy stuff, and that's awesome because there are people that you can hire to do that, or you can come up with the appropriate design that suits your property and suits your nature, and it's that much easier to take care of. You know, it's you got to start with the right plan, knowing what your needs are and what your heart wants.
You're listening to For Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host. And today, Genevieve Joelle Villamizar is in the studio with us. And we were talking about landscape design. And the college you went to was CSU. What did you learn there and what didn't you learn there?
Colorado State University in Fort Collins was an amazing school to go to for what I was doing. They had this incredible relationship with Cooperative Extension with the state of Colorado because it's an ag school. And they also had a really strong relationship with the Denver Botanic Gardens, which was experiencing a complete renaissance with a new CEO and redeveloping the gardens in terms of the whole New West renaissance that was happening in the whole Rocky Mountain region back in the 1990s. And part of that was reappreciating our natives and exploring more sense of place and how to bring that into our work. My issue with CSU was there were no courses in natural resources.
Right.
That's huge. That's big.
Right.
We took no ecology classes.
Okay.
A lot of it was memorization. And being who I am, I was able to flow with that because I was huge into climbing at the time, huge into backpacking, and I was learning those things out playing in the world. I was learning what those relationships were just in fishing and watching butterflies and watching wildlife and seeing how all of those systems interacted together. So I was able to fill that gap. But I did so value the fact that we had those relationships with Cooperative Extension and the Denver Botanic Gardens. I wished they would have had us take some pre-architecture classes. I studied architecture for 3.5 years before I switched to landscape design. So again, I was lucky I had that background. But what I see that gets produced, you know, what you see in commercial landscapes and a lot of residential landscapes is they're so plant driven and they're not like ecologically driven.
Right.
So you get really static projects. That's what a lost opportunity. So I would have loved ecology, natural resources, architecture. I think they should have had us take the history of art, some fine art stuff, because that's what we're doing. You know, I come from a family of artists. My sisters are amazing artists. My dad's whole entire life has been dedicated to art. I happened to find my medium when I started studying horticulture. you know. Okay. I got a job in a flower shop while I was studying architecture, and I just realized, oh my God, I need to go in this direction with it.
What would you recommend to students today who want to make a career out of what you're doing? What would you recommend to them in their career path?
If this is something you think you're interested in, I would say landscape for a couple summers first. See okay. if that's really something that's going to blow your skirt up for the next 30 years.
All right. Yeah. That sounds like some good advice.
Mm-hmm.
What project are you working on now?
Oh, I've been working on this one for about a year.
Okay.
And it's 700 linear feet on the Roaring Fork. And it is, I don't know what he would call himself, but I can describe what our goals were for the site based on what he does. He's kind of a... His own life is deeply driven by the spiritual path, and he also tends to coach people in figuring out, you know, how can I move forward in my life? And so when he and I met and developed a design program, first of all, I was blown away because he already had the design program. And then we just kind of shifted things around a little bit as his own life changed over the last year. But originally and ultimately, what we've created is a river sanctuary. Not a sanctuary in terms of, oh my God, this is so fancy and beautiful. A river sanctuary in terms of honoring what that place is. I want people to arrive there, and I'm speaking in terms of me as a designer because it reflects what he as a client wanted. I want people to arrive there and just exhale, to feel safe, to relax, to know that they can open up any lid on their Pandora's box and explore it there. There are holding spaces for outdoor meditation. There are holding spaces for outdoor yoga. There are several, I know you, with our friendship about sacred spaces, like to use sacred spaces, taking us to some of the Ute places. For these people, I'm saying sacred space in that we're creating spaces where people can open their heart in ways that they never feel safe doing in their own ordinary everyday life and context. And the landscape is incredibly powerful in helping to cultivate that sense of safety. It is a riparian area that meets Red Rock Desert. So the complexity of the ecology has been really fun to play with. We're working with tons of different natives, and we're following the xeriscape principles of having the more cultivated spaces around the home and moving back to nature as you step away from the house. And it's about 6 acres. Again, we've been working on the design process for about a year, and we broke ground 2 weeks ago. I'm giddy as all get out because I've been placing plants all day today for the landscape crews and cool. working with the client and, you know, all kinds of decisions. Things arise, things change. And so you're constantly on your game and it's just fun. So this is an amazing place, the sanctuary.
This is a show about taking care of Mother Earth. So I try to ask the guests that are here what sense of place means in their work. And you've mentioned that term a few times today. Now it's your turn. What does sense of place mean to you?
What does sense of place mean to me? Wow. You know, it depends on where you are, whether you're inside or outside. And for me, I would have to speak in terms of landscape. And, you know, all creatives have a lens on how they see the world. And my lens happens to be, well, let's manipulate materials in nature and create that sense of place. And it really depends on what you want or what you need or what the client expects or what you're trying to create. And for me, a sense of place is the spirit of that place. But in my work in trying to create and heighten sense of place, I'm huge into meditation and all that kind of stuff. And I really think that it's so important for us to stop thinking, stop doing, stop planning, stop controlling, but just really be able to let your breath out and bring it back in and let it out and bring it back in and just breathe just the landscape and as you, as part of it. And it's that place of being, you know.
That's good. Okay. In the last couple of minutes we have today, where do you see yourself taking your work into the future?
Probably moving further away from the notion of landscape and garden. I'm a TED Talk junkie, and there are brilliant people doing amazing things out in the world, and I consider that my source of continuing education. And in light of, you know, the plight of the planet, I'm not a doomsday person. I see beautiful, amazing possibilities still, you know, despite everything that's happening.
Sure.
And I feel like my role is to be better at what I do, more in sync with nature, and figuring out ways to bring that more into all of our lives, because it's the disconnect between us and nature that's caused all of this. So my goal is to figure out how to replicate nature better and how to kind of prod her along into healing.
Well, thank you, Genevieve, for being with us today. Until next time, October 11th at 4:30, this is your host, Bill Kite, hoping that what you do on Mother Earth, you do for land's sake.